It was a South London smash and grab at Selhurst Park as Luton Town rescued a point in the very, very last minute to draw 1-1 with Crystal Palace in a huge game at the bottom end of the table on Saturday. To review all of the action alongside me, I've got the Lutonian journalist, James Cunliffe. I mean, Jesus Christ, we left that late.
What a point. Massive, massive point.
We'll reflect on just how big it is just after this intro. Hello everyone, welcome along to another episode of the Luton Town Supporters Trust podcast. As I said before the intro, we are reviewing Crystal Palace 1, Luton Town 1. Jimbo, they thought they had it done. They thought they'd got themselves through the mire, but we all knew what was coming. And in the end, Valerian Ismail got sacked.
It's some weekend of football, that, wasn't it?
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, have some of that.
Let's focus on the real matter of attention, though. You very much how the football played out in many ways. You mentioned it before the intro, though. There are points and there are points, and this is a serious, serious point.
Yeah, from the jaws of defeat.
I don't think it was the jaws, was it? We were right down in the gullet of defeat, weren't we? We were almost in the pit of the stomach of defeat. We were that far down.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, for the first time this season, I mean, we've been quite positive and I am now, but for 95 minutes of that game, I was starting to think it's not going to happen. Not just the game. I think everything's going against Luton here. We ain't got a defence. Everyone's injured. Everyone's a hamstring epidemic and, playing teenagers in the middle of the park. The best player's got a broken nose, can't breathe. I just thought it's going to go wrong now, and it's going to start to go wrong badly because they didn't have anything. They didn't really offer anything. Well, certainly in the first half. I mean, they're better in the second half, but when you get to that late knock-ins of added time, you're just thinking, well, that's it done. And I was, for the first time in this season, I was sort of in my head starting to write Luton's obituary almost. I didn't want to. It gave me no joy whatsoever. But it was. It just felt, flat and like that was the start of the beginning of the end almost, and just shows you really what can happen when a goal goes in and a goal like that and a fantastically well taken goal for Woodrow, first Premier League goal for Luton, first Premier League goal in 10 years. Both against Crystal Palace. Can we play you every week? that just changes the whole complexion of it now. And, because results have gone Luton's way since that. Forest got beat by Brighton, thanks for that. And now it's, within 3 points of Forest with them coming up in two games' time. And nearly everything in the garden seems rosy. It's just that there's a massive injury crisis to get through and everybody's knackered. But, what drama.
Yeah, no intensity, no energy, no bodies, no working muscles, no nothing. But the one thing this team has always got is pride, personal and professional pride. And my God, did we see it at the end on Saturday. Out on their feet, absolutely spent from the first minute, to be honest. This injury list has caught up with us in a big, big way. And unfortunately, two more came along during the course of the game. But they will not give in. It's not in their DNA. You can cut them open and try and find it. It's nowhere to be seen giving in, this team. And yeah, they should have been out of sight. They should have been absolutely dead and buried. They should have been buried so far that it wasn't even possible to come back. But when you hang in these games, you always get a moment to score in a game of football. I must admit, I thought it was Carlton Morris's volley, but it wasn't. And then the scenes at the end were what every single Luton fan went to Selhurst Park for, and all of the players. And I mean, we're going to discuss it all in a minute, but yeah, absolutely superb. Brilliant. I can't put into words how proud I am of these boys for the effort that they put in yesterday. They started on empty. I don't know if the tank can go beyond empty, but if it did, it's well there, and they're still going. And we say it all the time, don't we? It's this never say die attitude, this not giving in, that's keeping us alive. And if we're going to get the rewards for that, we will stay up. And I think Chris Sutton put a tweet out yesterday, actually, something along the lines of, he doesn't know if we're going to stay up, but he sure as bloody well hopes we're going to stay up, just for the sheer bloody determination, refusal to give in. And these are qualities that you'd like to think every football team has, but they just don't. And the fact that our team have got it, full credit to absolutely every single person involved at our football club at the minute, because they're going through the ringer, but they will not cease and give in.
Yeah, I mean, that is the one thing that we've got, really, isn't it? That also the fact that they're scoring goals 15 in a row in the Premier League, which is an astonishing number. They keep scoring, and they're up there with the best teams in the league for scoring late goals as well. So, you know, we've had those moments against Villa very recently, obviously, where the goal has been in the opposite, in the wrong net, but Luton always have a chance, and they had two shots on target, and one of them was a goal, which tells you really everything about yesterday. But yeah, there's players there running on, you know, the concept of fumes, let alone fumes. They're all knackered. They're all going to have to do it again twice this week coming. I don't know how they're going to do. They're going to have to patch them up. They're going to have to, you know, put square pegs in round holes, and everybody's going to have to fight and dig in, because it's going to be bonkers football, really. But yeah, what? I mean, I was so down in the dumps for 95 minutes, and it just shows you how it can change, isn't it? Because I had a great night. I went out on the beers.
I'd had a great day. I'd already been on them. Yeah, brilliant. Team sheet comes out then, two changes from the start of the Aston Villa game. Gabe Osho's back. He replaced Amari Bell. We knew Amari Bell wasn't going to be fit. Unfortunately, we kind of knew it on Friday. There was going to be no Sambi Lokonga, no Eli Adebayo. We still don't know whether they're going to be involved for Bournemouth. We'll discuss that when it comes to the Bournemouth game. The other change was Chiawogbeni, who you could be forgiven for thinking started against Aston Villa. He came on so quickly. He replaced Andros Townsend. So the team sheet, at least we had Gabe. We all knew that was a risk. We all knew he wasn't 100% fit. That was apparently obvious from the press conference, and you could tell right from the start that he wasn't. But credit to him, he's got out there, he's put a shift in. Actually, from 1 to 11, the team didn't look too bad. You look at the bench, and there's a growing number of youth teamers on that bench now. And again, that's not a problem. That's what the academy's there for. There's two goalkeepers on there, and you were like, oof. Let's hope we don't need to rely too heavily on the bench. Of course, we got that wrong. But yeah, team sheet, we are down to the barest of bare bones.
Yeah, it's, you know, what can you say about this constant churn of injuries at the moment? It is ridiculous to have two more go off, and defenders as well. We just haven't got a defence. it's ridiculous that this keeps happening. And I'm not having it that anyone blames anything, really. I just think that there's intensity levels, and it's just a freak occurrence that all these hamstrings keep popping. I don't think Gabe's is a hamstring, though, is it? But it's mad. Well, I mean, what can you do? There's literally nothing you can do. You haven't got a bench full of £50 million players on there, and you've got to make the best of it. But I mean, they're not. The whole team's not made up of multi-million pound stars, are they? And they're all a bunch of good, honest footballers that are going to just really dig in and try. And that's what they did. They should have been out of sight, Palace. I mean, God knows how. Mateta hasn't scored another one. And, Eze, that audacious lob that just went over. Edouard at the post, all this stuff. And they had so many chances. Great save by Kaminski. My God, what a great save that was with his feet. They should have romped that, Palace. But all the while, while they have conceded the most amount of goals in the last 10 minutes in the league by quite some distance, and Luton are up there for scoring them and going to the end, then it does give you hope, and it, and that's you've got to have that as well. I don't, you know, obviously Wilder's lost his head with that, with those comments about Burnley and
sharpening up my passport, we're off to Europe, mate.
He's lost his head about that. Burnley throw away a win as well this weekend, and it doesn't look like the same sort of little minor breaks are going for them. Yeah, touchwood, obviously, and we're still in the bottom three, let's be honest. But results like that, moments like that, late moments like that, they always say, the old adage is, that's what win you titles if you're going for the title. But it's got to be true. That's what will steer you to some sort of safety if you're down the bottom end as well. Because when there's hope, there's always a way.
I mean, you can almost use that adage with us anyway, because 17th is our title. It is. Yeah. You know, it's an absolute dream world to finish 17th in this Premier League, unless points deductions help us out. I actually thought we started the game pretty well. I thought we were popping some passes around quite nicely. First chance fell to us. Ross Barkley, unfortunately, ends up with a broken nose at the end of it. Heads across just wide. But yeah, I thought we started the game all right, but we never recovered from that. There was a long delay whilst Ross was treated. Good 4 minutes that he was getting treated for. You could understand it. I think his nose was completely splattered. And he's
probably doesn't look like Legend from Gladiators now, does he?
No, he does not. It's a very, very good point. Yeah, we didn't really recover, and they were coming into the game a little bit. And then, you know, the only kind of negative of this team is it must have big feet, because they shoot themselves in it so often. There can't be many more space left for the bullets, but we still find space for another one. Poor old Alfie's played the ball back to Thomas Kaminski. I mean, he hasn't even got it halfway there, as he bless him. And kind of hope that Gabe could have got us out of the shit. He didn't. To be fair, he did, didn't he? Him and Kaminski forced Munoz wide. Really poor cross, actually, considering there was no one else in the box. He put it behind Mateta, but to be fair to Mateta, audacious sort of finish, one of those sort of back heels behind the sort of kind of Cruyff turny sort of things as the ball's going past him, and it just trickled into the back of the net. From the angle that I had, when it left his foot, I was hoping it might have just slid wide, but it didn't. It just caught the inside of the post, and a very undeserved goal, but another one that could be avoided.
And that's the main thing, isn't it? Although Palace did cut Luton open, they didn't take advantage, and that's happened with so many other teams. The ones that are killing them are these own unforced errors. And that one is especially, I'm now just factoring it into games, though that's going to happen once or twice, and you've just got to deal with it, because it just seems, you know, if there's a hamstring epidemic, there's an epidemic of that as well. It's just remarkable how well they can play for most of the game, and then one little slip up and it proves costly. I mean, it could have been a lot more costly, because Jordan Clark makes a mistake as well, but obviously doesn't get punished when, really, really sure that was a better chance in my view for Palace, and it didn't happen. But I just put it down, they're knackered. I think they're absolutely knackered. I mean,
I've seen some talk on social media, if it is talk. Is it talk? Social media? Or is it whatever it is?
Bollocks.
Written stuff on social media, whatever it is. But yeah, that confirms it. Bollocks, that Alfie's game's dropped off since Ryan Giles left. I mean, no. Alfie's game has dropped off because he is absolutely shattered. He's not even running on fumes. He's running on the fumes of the fumes.
Yeah.
He might still be feeling that injury from when he was wiped out at Anfield as well and had to go off that day, but he didn't miss a game having done that. He still played the Man City game and ended up at centre-half in the Man City game that followed it. And that's only, 3 weeks ago, that Anfield game, less than 3 weeks ago. And he was absolutely poleaxed in that game. So he could easily be playing with some sort of bruising or something like that. To suggest his game has dropped off because Ryan Giles has left is an absolute nonsense. It's an absolute nonsense for Alfie, and it's an absolute insult to Joe Johnson that he's not pushing Alfie in the competitive way that Ryan Giles was supposed to. But also, Giles left because he wasn't including himself strongly enough to be given a chance in the first team. There was no competition for Alfie before Giles left. It is just simply, he is absolutely cream crackered.
That's a strange take to still be. I heard that back into January and February. So for that take to still be having some legs is bonkers. There was no competition from Giles from about five games in.
Once he'd replaced him, that was it.
Once he scored that banger against Gillingham and got back in the side, Giles didn't even have a sniff, really, and that's why he's gone, because he knew he wouldn't. I mean, you could probably say maybe they should have got someone in to replace him. Who's to say they didn't try? January's a shit window to buy players in. It really is. So you can't really level that at anyone. They probably tried very hard to get players in, but who are they? How many players do you want, and who are they replacing? I mean, you can't predict this absolutely catastrophic run of injuries, and it may still take its toll. I mean, it did on the weekend at Palace. It took its toll, but it ultimately didn't because of the result. But who knows further down the line? I think it's just going to have to get to this international break with some positive results, obviously, because they're massive, massive games. But and then see what comes out after that.
Yeah, indeed. This international break is needed more than any international break has ever been needed. Alfie's just knackered. Get behind him. Every time he gets the ball, gee him up. Give him as much energy from the terraces as we can, because the boy is absolutely fucked, and we've got to get another 180 minutes out of him over the course of this week, if we possibly can. Well, hopefully we're ahead in one of the games and we can ship him off and save him that way. But, you know, these are two big games coming up. You're right. I mean, it was almost like they couldn't see Mateta. I mean, he's only 7 foot tall, whichever way you look at him. But Alfie's put him clean through on goal. Jordan Clark's put him even better clean through on goal. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne didn't set Erling Haaland up the way we were setting this bugger up, did he? And thankfully, though, I mean, it's got a bit. I was wondering why he weren't their top scorer, because he's an absolute beast, isn't he? And we found out why. He will never have a hat trick laid on a plate any easier than that, and only come away with a third of it in his life. I mean, he's gone around Kaminski. He's done really well to get him as wide as he possibly can. But even then, he's got 2/3 of the goal to aim at, and he shanked it wide. And you're kind of like, whew, thank God for that. And when we got through to half-time at 1-0, I thought, well, last week we were as flat as a pancake in the first half, no intensity, et cetera, et cetera. Rob will get into them and have the same impact, and we'll come out much better in the second half. But it was in them first 10 minutes of the second half that you really realised just how low on energy these boys are, because they couldn't rouse themselves from that. We almost conceded straight after the restart. Eze was through, and we managed to bundle it behind for a corner, and then four or five corners came and went very, very quickly, and we just couldn't get a foothold in the game. Obviously, Ross wasn't having his best game because the poor soul couldn't breathe through his, you know, broken nose. Clicker's every sort of short pass Clicker was doing was either short or going to Palace players. When he went and started playing those diags, actually he looked a much better player, but we just couldn't get anything going. Then we had the injuries. Poor Tedden's gone down. Thankfully, I think it's just sort of cramp or a sort of tight-ish hamstring, so they're kind of hopeful that he might be okay. They got him off straight away, and he kind of came back on, but didn't push it for too much longer, and off he went. And then the chances just started to come in, and they kept on coming, didn't they? And it was like, well, we're going to fall 2-0 down and it's not our day, but, you know, you just got to live to fight another day. But they just didn't want to finish us off, Palace.
Yeah, and thank you very much for that, because they should have done. They should have been out of sight. It was, the fact that they didn't capitalise, I guess, maybe in hindsight, I don't know, maybe at the time, you tell me, that's making you think that there's something in this game still.
When Mateta's header was brilliantly saved by Kaminski, I mean, what is he, four or five yards out? It's absolutely no right to save that whatsoever. It wasn't like the Morris versus Martinez one that was dead straight at him last week. He did have to move for it, Kaminski. He had to react. Once he saved that, then I'm thinking, hold on a minute here. The longer they don't put us to bed, we are going to snatch something in terms of a chance in this game? Because at this point, we'd barely had a shot on goal. We hadn't had a shot on target. First one of those came along in the 80th minute. It was just one-way traffic. Eze was pulling the strings. I mean, what a fucking footballer that boy is.
Yeah.
The outrageous audacity for his shot just inside the halfway line. I mean, I'm in the away end blowing like crazy to get that over the crossbar. Just go. I started coming down way too early for my liking. Thankfully, the crossbar kind of saved us. But it was like, it wasn't a siege, was it? But it was steady flow of pressure that we just could not repel.
Yeah, it wasn't a siege. I mean, if you look at the possession stats, which don't tell you much a lot of the time, but they're still worth mentioning, 51% for Luton, remarkably, throughout the whole game. So, but it was just that there wasn't any threat from the other in the other end from Luton's perspective. And yeah, to wait so long for that first shot on goal for Morris and then the other one is the goal, and that's all there is really. It properly was a smash and grab, and but the there'll be a nervousness in Palace fans as well, won't they? Because they're conceding so many late on. It happened against Tottenham the week before when they were winning, and then they conceded three and they lost. So you know, all of these little things are areas that you can play on, or you know, at least have some sort of hope on, if particularly when you're not playing as well as you could, because, you can forgive flat performances sometimes when they've given so much. And when you factor in the injuries, it's just, it's mad. I don't know how it came about. I've seen it, obviously. I've seen it with my own eyes. But, when you look back on this season, that is one hell of a, added time period, because I didn't see it coming.
No, nobody saw it coming. I mean, you mentioned injuries there. Gabe Osho's gone off. I mean, when he's come over to the Luton end, he's got the best part of a traffic cone wrapped around his knee, which is obviously being there to hold ice in or something to ice it. Just a word on Gabe, though. Obviously injured going into the game. Gave us 70 minutes of absolute Trojan-like football up against Mateta, who isn't any ordinary striker. He's a physical beast.
Yeah.
To give us 70 minutes in those circumstances, you know, yes, it's the job and everything else, but, you know, that's above and beyond, really. We've literally eked out every last second that we could out of him. And, just hope that the knee's not as bad as it looked when it was wrapped up in so much ice, really.
Yeah, we'll see. On Tuesday when Rob does his pre-match for Bournemouth. But I suppose if Mengi's fit, then you could perhaps, that's the time perhaps you're going to have to throw in Hashioka from the beginning. So it's not, all is not lost, I suppose. And the performance of Hashioka against Villa in the second half sort of gave you food for thought that there's reinforcements there. But it is threadbare, and that's a worry. And so anytime anyone goes to ground and they don't roll around on the floor, these aren't players like that. So when they do, I mean, the likes of like Amari in the Aston Villa game never stays on the ground if he doesn't have to. And that's the worry. And every time somebody goes down at the moment, you're like, there's gasps, isn't there? Because there's nothing to replace it. I mean, I can well imagine the scenario this season where Pelly's going to have to play at centre-back at some stage, because it's that that's the level of dire straits that is in at the moment for the defensive injuries. I can't remember a season like it. I don't know if you can.
No, I mean, the closest that we've got to it was two seasons ago, wasn't it, when we ended up with a back four of like two fullbacks, two midfielders and everything else. But I mean, when you compare it to the level that we're at as well, I mean, this is so much stronger than that. So yeah, fair play to Gabe. And you knew we were in trouble then, because it's Corley Woodrow who's come on for him. I don't mean that, I mean there's literally no other defenders to come on for him. Obviously Hashioka had already come on for Mengi. That was it as far as defensive reinforcements were concerned. And then they put 6 minutes of injury time up, don't they? And you're like, well, let's just have one chance. But the first 5 minutes of them injury time, Edouard hit the crossbar. A little bit unlucky, that actually. That was a pretty good effort. mighty glad that hit the top of the crossbar and went over. I mean, you mentioned about Crystal Palace's sort of record of conceding late goals. You can see why, can't you? Because their game management was pathetic. I mean, they took off their best midfielder and brought on Will Hughes, who, with the best will in the world, ain't much cop. And he got wiped out by Luke Berry just for good measure as well.
I loved that.
What a tackle that was. Luke Berry has definitely got it in his head that if this is his only Premier League season, he's bringing some scalps along with him because he is charging into tackles left, right and centre.
Fair play to him.
So they've taken off their best midfielder and brought one who's barely at the level, if that. And then they've slowly kind of retreated a little bit. And then what the fuck Eze's doing in the last few minutes? If I'm a Crystal Palace fan, I'm fuming. He's pissing about with back heels and the Olays and all these Cruyff turns and fancy dance stuff. Put it in the corner, run the clock down, and then do your celebrations and all that nonsense. If you're 3-4-0 up, yeah, then that stuff's great. You were 1-0 up, mate. And all that's doing is riling people up. You're inviting trouble. And then a couple of minutes later, the ball breaks to Corley Woodrow in the middle of the park. He puts the ball out to Andros Townsend. Who does Andros Townsend cut inside very easily? Oh, yeah, that'll be you, Mr. Eze, who dangles his foot at the cross with no real intent to stop it whatsoever. Fair play to Woodrow, because he's done 50 yards, right, from laying the ball off to Townsend, getting in the box. He is absolutely charged in there. The ball in is beautiful. It's a beautiful ball. Someone's going to get a head on it from a Luton shirt. It don't matter who. There was four or five of them queuing up to go in and attack that. There was Woodrow, there was Morris, there was Berry, there was Barkley. They were all in there. It was Woodrow who got the best touch possible from the header just inside the post. And my God, the limbs in the away end. My back has been fucking killing me since it happened, but I really, really don't care. I don't know how it's happened or why it's happened.
You've got a good shoe in from someone throwing their bodies over seats.
Someone's absolutely battered me, but whoever it was, fair play to you. Unbelievable scenes. And it's all on Eze. He's had the opportunity to stick the ball in the corner. I'm mighty grateful that he didn't. But again, if I'm a Palace fan, but from a Luton point of view, wow, what a goal.
Yeah, that header is exquisite. The only way that's going in the goal is if he gets it exactly in off the post like that. It's such a great finish. But he's got that in his locker and people forget it too much because he probably hasn't got the athleticism of Morrison Adebayo, but he's probably a better finisher than both. And you know, that shows it. The one last season against Norwich shows it. It's just that he doesn't really have the opportunities to do it. But, I mean, he might have now because they've got no one else in the bloody squad. So, it's a great, great, great finish, you know, for to come on and super sub it that way was incredible to have your second Premier League goal 10 years after the first one against the same club. I mean, these sorts of things are what fairy tales are written about. And if Luton can stay up that moment, forget about the rest of the game. Well, forget about the rest of the game apart from one other moment, then they're massive, massive in the course of the story of that season. I think the other moment for me...
Yeah, I've bypassed it and I shouldn't have done.
The other moment was...
We called him out, didn't we, last week? So yeah, absolute apologies for that, Issa. You might have cost us 2 points, or sorry, a point last week. You got it back this week. That block in injury time was sensational.
That was, you know, fully deserved. His celebration at the end says to me that's a relieved man because I'm led to believe that he was pretty distraught after the Aston Villa game because he didn't track the run of Digne. There was other players that didn't do their jobs as well, so it can't all be on him. But, you know, it's not the first time that that's happened at the back stick for him, for Issa Kabore. But, to throw your body in the way of what was going to be a goal, and he did throw his body. He was all off the ground. He threw everything he had at that and to get a block on it is a sensational block. And don't begrudge him any of those celebrations at the end because he fully deserved his part in that because that, like you say, for the first 5 minutes of that added time, it was just like, how many can Crystal Palace score?
I mean, at the time of the block, you just thought, oh, well, he's kept the score respectable. And then 2 minutes later, he's earned us a point.
Mm.
That block alone, not just the block alone, of course, we still got to go and score the goal. But at 2-0, the game just fizzles out, didn't it? They might even have got a third. There was enough time and our heads would have gone down. The energy would have got into the legs and everything else. But yeah, absolute credit where it's due. It's for all that we called you out last week, cannot speak highly enough of that block and your performance in general, actually, off the back of that. Because he was really, really good down that side. Mitchell didn't really get too much of a look in. And of course, Eze tries to drift out to the left as well. So he was up against some dangerous challenges. He was playing right centre back for a few minutes. He ended up, it was just a normal right back at the end of the game when we went into a back four. And yeah, full credit to him. Do you know what? I'm glad it was Cordy Woodrow who scores. He gets way too much shit off of Luton fans. I've said it before. There are plenty of footballers in world football who, if they're not getting the game time that they'd think they should get, that they'll kick up a fuss, they'll make a storm of it and everything else. But no, Corley gets his head down. He works hard in training. He contributes to everything that we do in training. From that, I mean, when they do team versus opposition team to sort of replicate how the game's going to go, he'll be on the opposition team giving it his all. He's not just lounging about in training. He works his bollocks off for the few minutes that he does get to prove that he can do the job. And like you say, if we're going to need him now, and Morris was feeling his hamstring at the end as well, which I'm led to believe is only cramp, and we're hoping that he'll be okay. But two games back to back, we're not going to be able to get through these without using everyone that's still available. Absolutely delighted for Corley. Forget the fact that he's one of our own and he should always be supported for that anyway. Just the fact that his hard work away from the football pitch gets him a reward like that, full credit to him.
Yeah, and it's just a massive, massive goal. That the impact that that could have, yeah, everybody's probably knackered, but psychologically, everybody would be refreshed by that. You saw his interview and the interview of Edwards afterwards. They clearly buoyed by that, as were the fans, as you know, everybody should be, because to get something out of that when you've faced so much adversity, not just the injuries, but just you just weren't at the races. And to get something out of that, it shows that there's fight in the team. Not that we didn't think it had ever left.
It didn't show us that there's fight in the team. It shows Nottingham Forest, who will have been watching that, because they didn't play until Sunday. So they'll have had someone at the game, because obviously they're scouting it for next week. It shows Nottingham Forest, whoa, we ain't giving up this fight.
Absolutely. And a lot of it's going to be psychology at the moment, because, you know, if you're Sheffield United and Burnley, take away all the other results that have gone anyway, but the position they're in and the results that they've suffered this weekend, where they've both let slip wins in late stages, whereas Luton go and grab something. Not necessarily saying that Luton have anything to fear with those two. I think that they're gone. But the psychology of it is the complete opposite from what they're experiencing. And when you have to play Bournemouth and then you have to play Forest, and they know you're not going to quit, it's like Luton are like the Terminator, aren't they? They absolutely will not stop. They've got no arms and no legs, and they're crawling along using just their teeth. But they're still going.
We're like the old Duracell bunny, aren't we? We're waiting for the battery to run out. But the thing's like everlasting long life battery, isn't it? It's just not going to stop. It's brilliant. The players and Rob knew what it meant. The celebrations after full time, while they weren't like title winning Jamie Carragher celebration police kind of levels, they were longer than normal. The players enjoyed that with the fans a lot more than what they normally would do. I mean, only maybe another 5 minutes longer, if that. But you could tell it meant a hell of a lot to them. Based on everything we've said, the adversity, the lack of energy, the fact that everyone's just cream crackered. I'll keep it. Keep it normal.
The significance of it is huge. And everybody that's ever watched football and experienced it like that knows that these moments are massive. I mean, you've got to capitalize it and make the most of it. And it's a platform rather than the end result. But everybody knows that these things change seasons and momentum and obviously changed a what would have been a 5-game losing run and put a stop to that, and then going into a massive week and a massive run in, it has a lifting effect to everybody, really. And even if it's just going to be in their heads and not necessarily in their legs, that's something.
Yeah, I mean, talking to people on the train or on the way back to London Bridge, but on the train down to Norwood Junction, you kept on calling it Corley Woodrow winner because that's what it felt like.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't a win, obviously, it was a 1-1 draw, but it just felt like we'd won. Whereas, although the game played out similar to the Burnley game in that a substitute comes off the bench to score in the very, very dying embers, we controlled that. We dominated that Burnley game.
Mm.
There was no way we should have only drawn that game. We should have won that game. This was completely the opposite. This was, the, like I said right at the start of the podcast, this was your archetype smash and grab. But it just felt like a win. And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I woke up this morning still buzzing, thinking like we'd won a game. And that's what the players are going to be going into training this morning. They're going to be, their shoulders are going to be up. In fact, I hope he's given them a day off, to be fair. They do deserve a day off. But of course, we've got two huge games to prepare for. But they, whenever it is they go into training next, their shoulders are going to be up a little bit. The heavy legs are going to be maybe 10% less heavy. And you just, like you say, if we stay up on goal difference, that point will have got us into goal difference territory. Forget the fact that we've kept the score down in all of the other games. That point would have got us there. And you just hope these great moments, Forest away, when we come from two down in injury to equalise in injury time, that Burnley game, this one, just hope those 3 points get rewarded at the end of the season with Luton above that dotted line.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. It's about putting yourself in there with a shout. And, you know, Edward said it. We can do this. We can do this. And that translates everywhere and transmits everywhere throughout the team to everybody supporting Luton, but also to the other teams around Luton who are probably now looking a bit nervously over the shoulder because, you know, when you've got a team that just won't quit, then it's never over until it's over.
Yeah, you mentioned Rob Edwards. I loved the post-match interview that he gave. This bit in particular, and this means everything for me.
I keep saying it, that's our unique thing this year. Other teams that are in that mix, they don't want to be there. They think they shouldn't be there. We understand it at the moment. We knew this was going to be a big, big challenge coming into it. So we're all in it together. We know what fight we're in, but we can do it. And that's what I said to the lads in there. We can do this together. And that, with everything else that's going on and players missing and people playing out of position and, you know, young kids coming on as well, finding a way at the end in a 95th plus minute. That's why we'll be in this fight and we'll keep going all the way.
I mean, he's spot on. We're in the fight. We can do it.
That's it. It's all about belief, isn't it, really? And the goal does all the psychological work there, but the words after it are just like the cherry on top of the icing of the cake, really. And it makes you believe. It does. You're still jumping around, your back's still probably throbbing by the time he's giving that interview. People are, you know, hugging strangers and falling over each other still when he's giving that interview. But when you hear it back, whenever you hear it back, if you heard it back at the time or, you know, the next day, whatever, it just makes you feel like, yeah, we are in this. But we've always felt that. It just, for 95 minutes of that game, I thought, fuck, this is slipping away from Luton now.
Yeah, we all did, because you can see with your own eyes just how they're struggling physically. And sometimes it is a game too far, but these boys they haven't hit that game too far yet. That video hasn't gone as viral as the Bolton post-match, but I reckon I'm going to watch it a similar amount of times to how many times it went viral. I just love our manager with that. And he's not that kind of guy, is he? So for him to come out and actually say that, it just adds to, I mean, if Nathan come out and said it, he'd have washed it off as just a normal Nathan comment. I mean, he's back to doing his thing down at Charlton, isn't he? And fair play to him. He's doing a great job.
Yeah.
Great to see. But Rob's not like that, is he? He usually is kind of reserved and keeps it to himself. He knows that's a headline quote, but he still comes out with it. And usually he keeps them kind of reserved and stays away from doing other people's team talks for them.
Yeah, well, you can't not now. I think you have to let emotion take over at some stage, particularly in this running, and maybe that's going to be a benefit because, well, I mean, we've known all along that Luton are a proper team to be proud of, but they're not multi-million pound superstars, so they're not going to do it that way. They have to be a team, fight for each other, try and do things at full tilt, even if that is almost impossible at the moment, and stick together and do it that way. And when he comes out with those sorts of things, then it just sort of solidifies that they are in that frame of mind. It's just some turnaround, really.
Really is. Just before we wrap up the podcast then, quick word for Andros Townsend. Back on his old stomping ground, that piece of quality was just exactly why we've signed him.
Yeah, Premier League quality. It was a wonderful cross, wasn't it? I mean, they've worked on it. We heard from the players afterwards saying that they worked on that. You still got to execute it, haven't you? You still got to whip in an unbelievable cross. And, you know, if it wasn't Woodrow, like you say, they were queuing up for that because that was the last throw of the dice. There was nothing else. It was whip that ball in there and try and get something. So if anything, Woodrow's was probably the harder header than anyone else because they would have been a few yards closer to goal if it had gone over his head. But yeah, I don't care who scored it, but I'm glad that he did.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a great moment. It's right up there with the Chong moment for me, that, although my back wasn't quite as painful after the Chong moment as it is at the minute. The other person we have to mention is young Zach Nelson, who's made his Premier League debut. Teenager coming on with your team 1-0 down. And okay, he didn't necessarily contribute massively to it, but he was a fresh body, and that's basically all we were looking for in those last 5 minutes. Fresh body, you can run. And he did run. He actually played a nice little dummy, which I think Chong then got the ball out to Alfie at one point, which was nice. And he was involved in getting the ball back, which actually led to the winner. Lots of Crystal Palace fans I heard moaning that it was a foul. Not in comparison to the things that the referee let go earlier. And shout out to him, actually. There was a lot decent, made of that, yeah, ahead of the game, that he was the first decent South Asian referee, didn't do nothing wrong. And all this nonsense that he's getting because he signed some autographs. I mean, get a life, for Christ's sake. Yeah, so in line of everything else that he let go in the game, which I was fine with, it wasn't a foul. For him to be on the pitch and experience that moment and those scenes at the end, I mean, that's dreams are made of for a kid who's come through the academy, who is massively highly rated by Andros Townsend in particular.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, just on good omens alone, Zach Nelson's never lost a Premier League game. So get him on there more often. I mean, listen, it's dream stuff for the lad. And Rob trailed the possibility in the pre-match presser that I was at, unprompted as well, so you're thinking, oh, he's probably going to get a game at some stage, whether it's, you know, 30 seconds or whatever, he'll get on and earn that first appearance. But, you know, for a young lad, as bad as the injuries are around to your teammates, and you don't want that to be the case, these are the moments that you get to really grasp the nettle and build a name for yourself and force more appearances, because they've got no other option. But it's up to him to show it's not just because they've got no other option, it's because that and quality that he can bring in. And who knows, you know, that's where many a football career has started. So good luck to the lad, and I hope he makes it. I thought he used to be a striker, didn't he? And they've apparently turned him into an attacking midfielder. So yep, we could do with one of those.
Well, I think the first thing you look for any academy product at the level that he's going into, first team wise, is the physicality. Can he cope with the physicality of it? He looks a big lad. He looks like he can handle himself. And I mean, he's not been thrown in just because he's the last body standing. He's been thrown in because they think that he's good enough to be able to do a job in the long term. So it'll be interesting to follow his career. And it's good to see someone coming out of that academy without the initials JJ. So it is possible. Yeah, brilliant to see another academy product. And of course, there was one left on the bench as well, Axel Peisold, who was also on the bench. And listen, the amount of injuries we're getting, his time might have to come at some point as well. The craziest thing about this injury list is Rhys Burke ain't got his name on it yet. I mean, who'd have said that? If you told me there was going to be a dozen injuries and Rhys Burke's name wasn't on it, then brilliant. We just got to get Rhys through two more games and then he's got that international break and hopefully he'll be fine for the rest of the season then.
How many games has he played so far? Because it's usually seven games and then he breaks down.
Oh, that's all right then, because I think we're on three after that one, aren't we? And I don't think he didn't play at Anfield, did he? So he came on at Anfield, so it'll only be at five at the international break.
Well, that'll do.
That will do.
That'll do.
That will do indeed, yeah. Absolutely incredible scenes at the end. Who knows just what that point and that goal and everything else will do. But the one thing's for sure is it gives our chances a hell of a lot more of a rosier picture than had it not gone in the back of the net. We're now one result away from getting out of the bottom three. And that was the big thing for me, James. Yeah, when you're two results and the games are running out, you're like, oh, shit. But now you're only one result. And it just so happens that team are two games away from a humdinger of a game at Kenilworth Road at the end of this week. Who knows? As I say, who knows what it means, but let's hope it means absolutely everything. Just before we finish this podcast, thanks very much to everyone who's already donated to Mark Crowther's cycling causes. Both of them have seen significant contributions and donations and things. I saw Mark before the game at Crystal Palace on Saturday. He was looking quite well for a fella who just cycled from Luton to London, to be fair.
Probably got there quicker than you, didn't he?
He got there a hell of a lot quicker than me, yep. Absolutely, he certainly did, and anyone else who was on the trains as well. Yeah, we loved having Mark on. We were more than happy to promote his cycle challenges. So yes, thank you to everyone who has donated. Please do keep on donating to those two great causes if indeed you can. Thanks to everyone also who came up to me yesterday. There were loads of people who came up and said how much they're enjoying the podcast and had a chat and everything else. I really need to start getting you guys your names so that I can give you shout outs on here. That's my bad. But next time I will keep on doing that. But thanks anyway. The comments are absolutely superb, whether they're on the YouTube video where you get this podcast or if you see myself or James in person. We really, really do appreciate it because we do these podcasts for you. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. If you haven't yet subscribed, please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. They're coming thick and fast this week. Obviously, this is the first of three games this week. We don't want you to miss any of the podcasts. So if you hit that subscribe button, you'll get a notification just when each one drops. Thank you to the Hightown Club for hosting our studio, as always, to Sean Grant and the Wolfgang for our intro music, and to Ed Smith Creative for all the designs that you see on set. From myself and James, until next time, which will be a preview of an emotionally charged evening at the Vitality Stadium, come on, you Hatters.
You know what I love about this town is actually you. Everyone in it has got these massive souls.